thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I have.
Here's John Williams.
Two songs I like to share on Valentine's Day. Here they come. This is John. Then we'll talk a little bit about the Cubs baseball team. We did this yesterday. Didn't have all the data. An interesting perspective in just a minute. Stay tuned for that on all social media. Listen for, look for me. I'm WGN King John.
Happy Valentine's Day.
This is one of them.
Every day before I think. I don't think y'all heard, man.
What?
I just want to say happy Valentine's Day.
Each day is Valentine's Day.
This is the other one.
Is your figure less than Greek? Is your mouth a little weak when you open it to speak? Are you smart? Well, don't change your hair for me. Not if you care for me. Stay little Valentine. Stay.
Another version of this I posted from Britain's Got Talent. My Funny Valentine on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. Love the song, love the story. Happy Valentine's Day to you. I hope you have somebody near and dear to you heart, and if not, I hope you remember someone fondly today. I was at the Fannie Mae store this morning walking to work, and I popped in just to get a little treat for my bride. And
oh, yes.
The lady that was selling me my candy was so sweet and positive. And a guy next to me was also buying some candy. And she says, how long have you been married? And the guy said, 49 years. And she says, oh, my God, that is so wonderful. Men and women need to be together. And she was just putting out this whole Valentine's Day vibe. And then she looked at me and said, how long have you been married? And I said, about 36 years. And she said, oh, that's the most wonderful thing. And she's just going on and on. And I said, well, how long have you been married? And she said, I'm a widow.
Aww.
And she said, the woman standing next to me is a widow, too. I said, this must be a difficult day for you. They both said, it is. I said, well, you're doing a good job of spreading the love. And she said, well, thank you for that. Happy. And then she just cranked it back up.
They didn't have a tip jar out, did they?
I would have. I so help me, Steve. She wasn't working that way. It was all from the heart. But if she was, I could have been played. I would have dropped a 20. But, I mean, this is another one of those days where everybody celebrates or thinks they should celebrate love and be so close to somebody, and I'm so happy for if you are. But if that person isn't in your life right now, I wish you fond memories, if nothing else, of that feeling when you had it.
It's always been an important day in my family because today is my mom's birthday.
How nice.
Yeah,
how nice.
Happy
how
birthday,
nice.
Mama.
Boy, your dad's on double duty when those two lined up.
He is.
Can't miss that. So yesterday we spent a lot of time at the beginning of the show talking about this Cubs deal, and Phil Rosenthal in the Chicago Tribune answered some questions about it yesterday, and I'll just read two sentences or so from him. He said the Cubs and Sinclair, that company that tried to buy WGN Radio and TV some time ago, will negotiate carriage agreements with cable and satellite carriers such as Comcast, RCN, Dish, and DirecTV, as well as streaming services available in the ball club's designated market. So here's what's happened now. The Cubs have done a deal in principle with this company called Sinclair. They're going to produce Cubs games and shows and pre- and post-game stuff. They're going to have a channel. And then they're going to go to your Comcast company and your DirecTV satellite provider, and they're going to say, hey, do you want the Cubs? You have to pay for it. And then they will or won't. If they do, they're going to incur a cost. Phil estimates at around $5 per customer. And how are they going to get that money back? You are going to have to pay for that. Your bill's going to go up about $5 a month. Even if you don't like the Cubs, that's probably going to be part of your Comcast bill. When this happened in Los Angeles, is my understanding, the very same sort of deal was struck with different companies, of course, but and the cable providers and the satellite providers said, you know what, we'll take a pass. We, in fact, don't want to incur that cost. It's too expensive, and we won't do it. As a result, a lot of people in Los Angeles cannot watch the Los Angeles Dodgers on TV or don't have it on their system. At least that's how I understand it. Bill Shakin is an LA Times business reporter, and he joins us on WGN Radio. Hey, Bill, it's John Williams. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Good. Good afternoon.
Happy Valentine's Day, Bill.
Same to you.
Is that true, the way I described this story from the LA perspective?
It is very true. The Dodgers' new owners came in, much like the Ricketts family came in Chicago, and set out to not only put a winning team on the field, but obviously to make as much money as they could from owning a winning team. And the Dodgers' television rights were up for renewal, just as the Cubs just have been. So what the Dodgers' owners did is they cut a deal with Time Warner Cable, and the deal was essentially, you give us lots of money, and your job is to get the Dodgers on TV on this new channel and get every other cable and satellite distributor in town to pay for it. And as you said, everybody said no. So other than the people who were already in Time Warner Cable households, which is now Charter or Spectrum, nobody else can get the Dodger channel. And as a result, the majority of households in Southern California cannot see a team that there's pretty good interest in since they've been to the World Series in back-to-back years.
So the last couple of years that the Dodgers were in the World Series, a lot of people actually didn't have Dodgers baseball on their TV?
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, the World Series is carried on national broadcast.
I understand that. I understand
that. Everybody could see that.
The 162 games, yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be the sixth year where the regular season broadcast, for the most part, other than the national broadcast on ESPN on Sunday or maybe the Fox Saturday afternoon broadcast. But other than those, you get Sportsnet LA or you don't see the Dodgers. And the only way you can get Sportsnet LA is to be with the one provider in town that offers it because everybody else does not.
So it is true then that everybody in Los Angeles could see all of the games.
No, that is not true.
Oh, but they have
the Dodgers
to change.
Would like you to believe that.
No, no, but
what
let me finish that thought. Tell me what's wrong
about this.
Anybody and everybody in Los Angeles can get all of the games, but they have to sign up. They have to use that provider. They have to, instead of going with this one company or Comcast, they got to go with that company, right?
No. If you live in an area where you can get Charter, then yes, you can decide whether you want to see the Dodgers because you can subscribe to Charter or not. But there are areas in Southern California where Charter is not your company that provides your cable service. And I know because I live in one of them.
But wait, you don't even have it as an option? You can't get
that? In the very place where I am standing right now talking to you in my house, my choices for seeing the Dodgers are none. My cable company is not Charter, and nobody else offers it.
Wonder if something like that would happen here.
Sure could.
I know you're not the business writer for the Chicago Tribune or Crane's Chicago Business, but how did they misjudge that mark so completely? Or are they not unhappy with it because they got their money either way? The Dodgers did. So too bad that Bill can't watch them on TV, but maybe they don't care because they got the money from the provider.
They got guaranteed money, whether one household in L.A. sees the Dodgers or millions of households. The money is the same to the Dodgers.
Yeah.
So it was Time Warner Cable that was on the hook to get the channel distributed
right
to every other cable and satellite provider in town. And the thought was, 2 years before, Time Warner Cable had done the same thing. They started a channel for the Los Angeles Lakers, popular team, just like the Cubs, just like the Dodgers. They got it sold eventually, not right in the beginning, but eventually. And so everybody thought this would just be the same thing. And in the subsequent years, the trend where people had started to cut back on cable subscriptions, cord cutting as we call it, watch more things on streaming, that trend had become more pronounced. So if you're trying to get people to stay with their cable and satellite provider, the last thing you want to be doing is raise the bills every month. And what we know is that the deals make sense for the teams because everybody who subscribes to the cable or satellite service has to pay whether or not they're going to want to watch the Dodgers or the Cubs. And we also know that very few people watch any one channel. So at least in Los Angeles, you might have, if they had full distribution, one out of every 20 households that would be watching the Dodgers. And 20 out of 20 would have to pay. And DirecTV led the charge and said, doesn't work for us.
So then did the cable provider take it in the shorts? The Dodgers got their money, and I don't have to pay for it if I don't want to. Or maybe it's not even an option for me. It's a moot point. But then that provider, was it Turner, Time Warner Cable? What was the company that
it was Time Warner Cable at the time. They took it in the shorts. They've since been bought up by Charter, and Charter knew what was going on so they could account for this when they came in. So it's mostly an unfortunate situation for the fans, because what the Dodgers had counted on happening and what Time Warner Cable had counted on happening and what I'm sure the Cubs and Sinclair are counting on happening is that fans will rise up and say, we need our team. We want to see our team on our television. And look, whatever strategies companies might want to use, they respond to the market. So when people called DirecTV to complain about not getting the Dodgers, DirecTV said, you know what? How about some free Sunday ticket? We'll let you watch the NFL on us. And people mostly said, okay. The rest of the people didn't care so much. If enough people had canceled DirecTV because they didn't carry the Dodgers, DirecTV would carry the Dodgers. I guarantee you that. So we'll have to see in Chicago if enough people are willing to cancel their subscriptions to go, oh, wait, Sinclair doesn't have any broadcast deals completed yet for the Cubs. So we'll have to see where they get started to see if the Cubs fans will even have an option.
And I wonder if Cubs fans are different, right? That even though this sounds like a potentially bad or at least expensive deal for Cubs fans, that the fervor is so great in our city for our National League team that what happened in Los Angeles won't happen in Chicago.
It might or it might not, but remember that the number of people who are watching the Cubs or CNN or Home and Garden TV or any particular cable channel is very, very small.
Right.
So what the cable and satellite operators have to say is, all right, how about we might not carry the Cubs, but the 19 of 20 other people who aren't watching don't care, and they don't want their bill to go up. And what I'm sure DirecTV and Comcast and I think RCN was the other name you mentioned, what they will tell Sinclair is, we're willing to carry the Cubs, but you know what? The people who want it should have to pay for it. We'll put it on a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And, of course, the cost for that would be way more than $5 a month.
Well,
it would be 20, 25, 30, because they need to make the money. And is that viable? You know, who knows? We might find out.
That's what came up in a podcast I was on earlier today. A bunch of journalists said, we're not doing it. I won't tolerate that. I don't know that they have an option. But that very thing you described, let's make it like an HBO, came up. I've got lots of questions on the phone and on our text line for you. If you just give me 1 minute, I'll play a commercial, Bill, and I'll come back shaken from the LA Times, a business reporter there. So is what happened in Los Angeles with the Dodgers and their providers a possibility here in Chicago? More of your questions for our guest next. On a phone line, Bill Shakin is a business writer for the Los Angeles Times. He's in Los Angeles, and he doesn't get the Dodgers on his TV because that's the way their cable deal got structured. I'm not laughing. I just think that's absurd. Are you a Dodgers fan, by the way, Bill?
Well, you know, professionally, I write about them, so the only thing I root for is a good story, but you know, when I need to write about the Dodgers, it sure would be convenient to be able to turn on my TV and see what's going on.
I just think that's amazing. By the way, Charles had a question I think some of our listeners are wondering. Charles, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, good. What's up?
Now, have the Cubs mentioned anything about streaming or making it available online for a fee or, you know, would it still be included with a major league ticket? Any options? Have they discussed anything besides just the channel?
Rosenthal said in the paper that those determinations have not been made. But, for instance, Bill, if I get the MLB app, I can watch baseball games. Can you at least watch it on your device if it streams?
Well, what Major League Baseball has tried to do to pump up the value of these local television contracts, which have exploded in what they're worth, has to tell the local cable contract holder, in this case it would be Marquee, I think is what the Cubs are calling their deal with Sinclair. You get the streaming rights, but we want to pump up the value of your cable so fans can stream in their local market the broadcast of their local team only if they have a subscription to watch on television. So that's what we have here. If I want to watch, say, the Angels on my streaming device, I have to have a subscription to watch Fox Sports West, which is a local RSN for the Angels.
They've linked the two together. That's amazing. That's amazing to me. I mean, they're just going out of their way to cut off the fan base. And the next generation of fans who don't like paying too much for stuff, they're more nimble than this. I'm stunned by that, Bill. That's really surprising.
Well, and in fairness, every time we write about the Dodgers television disaster, we will always get emails and tweets from fans who explain to us how they get around it illegally, but it's not hard to do. And essentially the direction fans are being forced to go.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, thanks for the question. So while it hasn't been determined exactly what our options will be in the Chicago market, you know, what kind of streaming deal we'll have, if it's like the Dodgers and MLB's agreement, then you won't have the option unless you're paying. Even though right now I can get the MLB app on my phone, but that was last year. I don't know what it'll be like next year. But let me be clear about this. So if my provider is Comcast, Bill, and Sinclair and the Cubs have this agreement, and they come to Comcast and say, hey, Comcast, give us a whole bunch of money, and we'll put the Cubs on the Comcast system. I could say, yeah, let's do that, but I don't want to pay upcharge for that. I may not have an option, right? That's going to be part of, I'll either have to cut the Comcast cable or not. But if Comcast makes that deal in my best interest, but I don't want that, I have no choice, right? I can't subtract that channel from my package, right?
Right. That's, in the eyes of Major League Baseball, that's the beauty of these deals. Everybody pays for it, whether they watch. And if you go back to the Cubs and go back to Sinclair and say, let's do it a la carte. Let's charge the people that want to watch the Cubs $20 a month. They'll say, no, we need everybody to pay for it. So I'll skip ahead in the story for you. 6 months from now, I guarantee you'll start to read stories that say what Sinclair is going to do is tell Comcast, hey, you know, all those other cable systems you run around the country, maybe in California or in Texas or in Nevada or anywhere else, we are not going to let our Sinclair stations air on your Comcast systems unless you make us a deal that you'll carry the Cubs here in Chicago.
Sinclair is huge.
And we'll see if anybody cares. I mean, Sinclair will say, we'll pull the tennis channel from your system. Nobody's going to care about that. They might say, we'll pull our over-the-air, you know, our local news station. Yeah. Maybe some people will care, but I don't know if Comcast will blink. That might not be enough. So we'll find out.
But the flip side is, too, that the Comcast could say no to the Cubs. We're not going to, and Sinclair, we're not going to carry it because it's just too expensive. And that's too bad for the person who's a Comcast subscriber and wants it. So either way, there's going to be unhappy customers here. Bill writes for the Los Angeles Times. He's a business writer. And you're terrific, Bill. This has been sobering but instructive. And I appreciate your time joining us this afternoon.
All right. Take care.
That's Bill Shakin in Los Angeles. Steve, all of us are experts in somebody else's business, aren't
sure,
we?
Sure, absolutely.
So we all know how to run a baseball team or a cable operation.
Mm-hmm.
773 says, when the Blackhawks were not on TV, the fan base dried up. Actually, when the Blackhawks were not on TV, the fan base never grew. I wonder what John McDonough and Jay Blunk would say about this deal that the Cubs have now orchestrated with Sinclair and what their crystal ball says. I don't know. Hi, John. Brian from Montana. When GM broadcasts White Sox games, they can't be heard on my smart speaker or phone due to MLB licensing. Trust me, we know this. John, what's MLB thinking? Lots of texts about this Cubs-Sinclair story. We'll continue to follow it here on WGN. On a phone line right now, though, is Jennifer Blagg. She's from the law offices of Jennifer Blagg. She is one of the attorneys in the appellate case or courts now representing Jason Van Dyke. Jason Van Dyke, of course, the former Chicago police officer found guilty of killing Laquan McDonald. So there's two things that are happening here. One is Kwame Raoul and Joe McMahon, the special prosecutor in this case, are arguing that maybe the sentence for Van Dyke should be greater than it is, not because it should be more punitive, but simply because they feel the guidelines are wrong or they were not properly followed. But in the meantime, when Officer Van Dyke, former Officer Van Dyke, was transferred to a prison in Connecticut, within hours of his arrival in a minimum security facility there in Connecticut, he was mugged or beaten up or something happened. Jennifer's on a phone line, and she joins us now on WGN. Jennifer, it's John Williams. Thanks for joining us. Hi.
Hi, John.
There was a press conference. Where are you right now, by the way? Are you in Illinois or are you in Connecticut?
No, I'm in my office in Illinois, in Chicago.
As I guess you would be, because you're here working on his case before the state of Illinois, correct?
That's right. I'm working on our reply, our objection to the special prosecutors and the attorney general's mandamus, request for mandamus.
I just want to play a soundbite or two from the press conference today and ask you if you can tell us exactly what happened. But Jason Van Dyke's wife, let's play cut one, was at a press conference with two other attorneys today, and here's in part what she had to say.
All he wanted to do was melt to the background, do his time, and come home to his family. Unfortunately, he is not being afforded that right. He's being basically a prisoner within the prison system. He's not awarded phone calls. He's on lockdown 23 hours a day. That is not safety.
It is about the treatment that he's received in this new facility that she says cut to now. Well, if this is a matter of race.
This is a gigantic race issue. They put my husband in a setting to be harmed because of the fact that he was a white man who harmed a black gentleman in the line of duty.
Tiffany Van Dyke also reminds us that it's kind of weird that he was sent to a federal facility.
I am calling on the governor. I'm calling on the attorney general. I'm calling on all of the officials within the state and federal prison system to let me know. I'm demanding reasons. I'm demanding answers as to why they took my husband from a state facility and put him in a federal facility. My husband did not have federal charges.
Two other sound bites from Tiffany Van Dyke. She got emotional, of course, a couple of times during this press conference, but she's worried about his safety. She's worried about his life.
At the end of the day, I want my husband home. I want him to be safe. I don't need people to go into his cell and attack him. The next time this could happen, they could kill him. I cannot bury my husband.
It's Tiffany Van Dyke. One last excerpt from the press conference today. One of the reporters asked her and the two attorneys who were with her at this press conference if maybe the people that attacked him knew who he was.
And we do know that this attack was because of this case. It was not random.
How do you know that?
He's a police officer who was convicted of doing something on duty.
Yes,
it was going to happen.
Back to Jennifer Blagg now, attorney representing him, not in the original case, but on the sentencing issue. But just what's your reaction to what you've heard there, Jennifer? What are you hearing, and what do you want to say about those sound clips?
Well, that's a lot to unpack, right? Obviously, Tiffany's very upset, and who wouldn't be? She was worried about this from day one. It was concerns that we expressed to the judge during his sentencing hearing, and it's something that I'm very confident that the Illinois Department of Corrections is concerned about as well. So everyone wants Jason to be safe. Unfortunately, my understanding is he was sent to a federal facility that was a minimum security facility,
yep.
But that facility also houses inmates that don't have much time left but could have been possibly more violent offenders. Lots of times prisons do a step-down system. Like when you have 20 years, you stay in certain facilities, and then as you get closer to your release date, you're taken to a more minimum security prison so you can sort of be ready to adjust back to life outside of the walls. So I can't speak to why the Illinois Department of Corrections sent Jason to a federal facility necessarily, but I'm certain they did so because they thought that it would be a safer place for him. Unfortunately, that turned out not to be true.
Is there a jurisdictional issue, and is that interesting or relevant to you? That is, he wasn't found guilty of federal crimes, so why is the federal government housing him?
Well, I've heard that happen in a few other cases. It's normally an extraordinary situation, but it's not. I believe the Tribune talked about how Drew Peterson was sent to a federal facility.
That's right, and he was attacked there.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, this makes no sense in a way. I mean, if the purpose of this was to protect him, and then they send him to a minimum security facility in Connecticut. We have federal facilities in Illinois, too. Maybe they thought the distance would somehow insulate him or the other, you know, prisoners from the knowledge of who he was, but evidently that didn't work. He walks in and they jump the guy.
Right. I mean, I don't know the exact circumstances of what happened when he got jumped. I mean, I've talked to Jason. There's no question he got jumped. I do believe it was because of who he was. But, you know, I'm not one to disparage IDOC's decision to send Jason to a federal facility, because I believe they thought it would be the best, likely for the reasons you said. He's much further away. The case, even though it is a national case, I'm sure they anticipated people wouldn't know who he was there like they do here.
Do you know what happened in that? She said it sounds like the attack took place inside his cell. Have you had any communications with his other team? And do you know exactly what the nature of the attack was or how bad it was?
I can't say with 100% confidence it was in his cell. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure if he was out with the general population when it happened or if he was in a cell. I think he was not in his cell. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure.
Do you know how severe his injuries were?
Not severe.
You know, I understand there are some people who don't have much patience or sympathy for this conversation. He's not the victim here. He's the convicted person here. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, people get sent to prison as punishment for a crime they committed. They don't get sent to prison to have their life in danger. They're supposed to be protected in prison. And anytime you have a high-profile client, whether it's someone like Drew Peterson or obviously someone like Jason, who would have a target on their back because of what they represent, right? There's obvious outrage in the community about this shooting. He has come to symbolize all the perceived wrongs of the Chicago Police Department. It's the first time an officer has been convicted of second-degree murder, and it's a very high-profile case, and people want vengeance. And so when you have something like that happen, obviously you have to take special precautions for that defendant. You have to ensure his safety while he is in prison.
Kathy is listening and wanted to say something. Kathy, you're on WGN. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Tiffany Van Dyke is delusional. In that second soundbite, she used the verb harmed. That Jason Van Dyke killed a boy. Not only with one shot, but 16. It wasn't like, whoops, I hit the trigger a second time. He did it 16 times. That family's completely delusional. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thanks for the phone call, Kathy. What's your response to that, Jennifer?
Well, she's making my point for me, right? If her position is that Jason doesn't deserve to be protected in prison because he was convicted of second-degree murder, I don't even know what to say to that. It seems obviously an unjust position that he should be in prison and be allowed to be beaten up and harmed because of his conviction for second-degree murder. You know, you can't lose sight of the fact. I understand why people are upset. But Jason, the jury found Jason guilty of second-degree murder. What does that mean? Jason reported to the crime scene as a Chicago police officer, and the jurors found that Jason acted believing that his life was in danger. Now, they found that belief was unreasonable, but they did not find that he just went to the crime scene and started shooting without believing his life was in danger. So you can take issue with the fact that that belief was unreasonable. People can be upset about it, but he's a Chicago police officer who went to a crime scene trying to do his job and protect the public, protect the people of Chicago, which he had done for 15 years. You know, Jason had never fired his weapon on duty before this night, and I think that's significant.
How do you plan to argue before the appellate court then?
Well, the appellate court's different than the Supreme Court, right? We have two different things going on. We filed our notice of appeal because we learned that the petition for writ of mandamus was going to be filed. We had to do that to preserve some potential issues that could arise from the mandamus, depending on what the Supreme Court does. So that preserves that issue. That's a separate bag than the mandamus, which we will be objecting to because we very much disagree with their assertion that Jason's sentence was illegal.
You know, it's complicated for some of us. What you just said, notwithstanding, is that it would see if you said prioritize severity of crimes, I would say second degree murder is worse than aggravated battery. That's the complication here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and I don't know how to explain it in the most simple way, but basically there's one case from the Illinois Supreme Court that says you need to look at the severity of the sentence. What kind of sentence did the legislature say this crime should receive? So aggravated battery has a minimum of 6 years. Second-degree murder, however, has a minimum of probation. Because of that special circumstance I was talking about, right, the person acted because they really believed their life was in danger. So the Supreme Court in one case did a simple analysis that said, well, the severity of the crime just depends on the severity of the sentence. Aggravated battery has a greater sentence. You have to be sentenced on aggravated battery, right? So that's what the Attorney General is arguing. But there's a whole other line of Supreme Court cases that say you can't ignore a jury's verdict when they convict someone of second-degree murder. When you get convicted of second-degree murder, the jury has spoken, and you should be basically sentenced on that. Otherwise, and I'm going to use a legal term here, but otherwise it nullifies. It creates a nullity for the legislature's carving out of this second-degree murder conviction, right? It just wipes it away. So what that would allow a prosecutor to do in the future, should they choose to charge the case like they did in this case, and I've got to mention, this is the first time that I know of anyone that a prosecutor has charged a case like this, where they charge each individual shot. So if that would allow a prosecutor to only charge a defendant with aggravated battery when someone was killed, and the more shots there are, the more sentence they would accrue. So in this case, then they would argue you could get 96 years for aggravated battery, versus the minimum sentence for murder, which is 20 years. You follow me? That's sort of complicated.
Well, then, but why not? Why didn't they do that then? Well, I mean, wouldn't it have been within the right of the judge to say, okay, if aggravated battery is the crime for which I'm going to sentence you, he could have done that times 16, couldn't he?
Well, then it gets a little more complicated. You have to find great bodily harm for the sentence to run consecutive. Otherwise, potentially, they all merge together and they run concurrently. So in other words, if you get convicted of all 16 counts, you get sentenced to 6 years on all 16. If they merge together, you serve six.
But you understand listeners right now who are throwing up their hands saying, this is nuts. That sentence was not severe enough. Whatever the legislature intended, whatever the judge intended, for him to be able to walk free after 16 shots after 3+ years is just too soon. And I think that's what, at the end of the day, is motivating Kwame Raoul here.
Well, perhaps. I mean, what he said is motivating him is that the sentence is illegal, right? So in order for a sentence to be illegal, in my mind, the judge had to not follow a statute. They have not pointed to one statute in this case that the judge didn't follow. So, and the 16 shots, obviously that is what is very inflammatory and gets people very upset. But when it comes to sentencing, it's not relevant. The judge, there's a statute, and it sets out what a judge is supposed to consider in aggravation and mitigation. And how many times somebody fired is not one of those factors. What is one of those factors is, were you convicted of second-degree murder, right? Did the jury find that you believed your life was in danger?
I'm out of time. I really appreciate your time on two connected but disconnected cases today. Your thoughts have been helpful, and we'll call you again. I appreciate you joining us, Jennifer.
Sure, no problem.
From the law offices of Jennifer Blagg, that's Jennifer Blagg, who in the appellate process is representing Jason Van Dyke. He was mugged when he was transferred to that federal prison in Connecticut.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I wrote a poem about the weather. Oh, good, John. Where can we find it? It's at WGNradio.com. No, it's on my Facebook page, on all social media, WGN King John. Hey, that's me.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Dance with me now. Here we go.
I don't think y'all heard me. I just want to say happy Valentine's Day.
Each day is Valentine's Day.
Go back and listen to that Outkast cut. That is awesome. And that whole album is terrific, but hard to beat Sammy on this day.
Is your mouth a little weak when you open it to speak? Are you smart? Well, don't change your hair for me. Not if you care for me.
Valentine's Day from all of us at WGN Radio. Wish you and yours the very best. It's 2:09. Let's start with the conversation here. Ryan, Steve's going to interrupt us for a special report in just about 60 seconds or so, but you are reporting for ABC the Jussie Smollett story. Is that correct?
It is. Yeah, he was on Good Morning America today, and then sure enough, within probably an hour or two following that interview being aired, we got information from the Chicago Police Department that they have two persons of interest who they believe were in that image that was sent out, that surveillance image. They know who they are. They've got them. They're questioning them. Not suspects at this point, just considered persons of interest who are in the area and people they want to talk to.
Yeah, we always wondered who those people were. We'll follow this conversation in just a minute. Steve, what's going on in the newsroom?
Well, in Washington, you know, they're moving toward passage of this budget compromise that would keep the government open. We're now getting indications from Senator McConnell that a national emergency could be coming too.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Mark Remillard. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell moments ago on the Senate floor says that the president has indicated to him that he will sign a compromise spending bill to avert a government shutdown, but that he will also declare a national emergency in order to get funding for his border wall. A vote on that spending bill is expected this hour in the Senate. Again, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says the president has indicated that he will sign a spending bill to avert a government shutdown, but will also declare a national emergency to get funding for his border wall. I'm Mark Remillard. This has been a special report from ABC News.
So we'll keep our eyes on that, but not even a chance to exhale after the government stays open. The president signs it, and we'll move right to the next one, John. And
every
Brian.
Time I think I can anticipate the next move or even possible moves, I'm reminded that I can't. So it's both. He'll sign the bill and declare a national emergency so that he can get the additional money.
Yeah, they said he was going to try to find ways of taking money from other pockets, and this may well all be part of that, but he's going to do it simultaneously.
I'm just clicking on Donald Trump's Twitter account. He said 1 year ago today, he's talking about Parkland, he's talking about reviewing the funding bill with my team at the White House, exclamation point. But no tip here that he was going to maybe do both, sign the bill, but still declare a national emergency, which, if I'm clear on this, guys, Ryan's in the studio and Steve's in the newsroom, would enable him to, if the courts support this, because I suspect there'll be a challenge, take money from other areas and dedicate it to the wall, use it at his discretion.
Which my understanding is not something that can be done in a lot of, at least some of the ideas that he's floated are not things that can be done. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it all works out.
So, Ryan Burrow, WGN Radio News, also reports for ABC and has been following nationally the Jussie Smollett case, which when you walked into our studio here on the 18th floor of 303 East Wacker, downtown Chicago, we can virtually see where this incident evidently took place. It's just around behind the Sheridan, over behind NBC. It's off. Was it off of Illinois? Was that the side street? Or was
the subway restaurant. Okay, so first we learned that he went to go get some smokes at Walgreens, which closes at midnight. We went and verified that. And if this all went down at 2 in the morning, that makes sense. So we went there, realized they're not open, can't get cigarettes. I'm going to go over to Subway and get food because he had just flown in and apparently had no food in his apartment. Went and got the food, apparently a tuna sandwich and a salad. Started walking back, and that's when he was yelled at. And these people who yelled at him identified him as being from Empire. He said he initially didn't react because they basically said Empire. And he's like, I don't respond to Empire. Then they came through with the racial and homophobic slurs, came up, punched him. Now, he says in the Good Morning America interview that he punched this person back. And they started to scuffle. There was an icy area, and it sounds like it was in the stairwell that's kind of like right. No one can see where I'm pointing, yeah. But it's just so darn close. I mean, it's hard to describe when you can't actually point it, but show it to people. But it's right over there. And he said the whole incident itself probably took about 30 seconds. He said it felt like minutes, and then it was over. They just ran away.
They put a rope around his neck, and they also poured some liquid on him, maybe bleach.
And he says he didn't know that rope had been around his neck until well after they were gone.
Now, earlier reporting from the Tribune, Sun-Times, and others said that he left the rope on his neck or shoulders so as to demonstrate to the police what had happened to him.
It's a possibility. I mean, that's the one thing, right? Why would you still have the rope around your neck if the police are called maybe as long as an hour after this incident happened?
But the police did confirm that there was a rope.
They did, yes.
Okay, so is anybody denying or even questioning that he was mugged or assaulted in some way?
No. You know, at this point, we're just going off of what police say. There are blogs everywhere. I mean, the police are still investigating this as being potentially criminal activity, some kind of assault. That being said, when they're putting this out, they continue to say alleged assault. So, you know, they're trying to get to the heart of it because as you and I can see, I mean, there are cameras loaded up all up and down there, and yet there's nothing showing this. Now, does he have to prove that it happened? I mean... Just because there's no camera footage doesn't mean it didn't happen. No, absolutely not. But a lot of people are finding it very hard to believe that two guys were hanging out on the street waiting for him in 2 degree below zero temperatures for this situation to play itself out.
At 2 in the morning when he had just got into town.
Yeah.
So how fortuitous for them unless they had at some great length been charting his progress, and that seems to be dubious.
Identified him as being from Empire, knew who he was. Obviously we mentioned about the cold weather had these things on them, the rope, the chemicals on them at the same time. So I don't know.
I think also curious about this case is the fact that he didn't turn his phone or phone records over to the police right away. The Mincing Rascals, that podcast we record here at WGN Radio with some folks from the Tribune and some of us here at WGN Radio, kicked this around today. And there were two different arguments about how he handled his phone. That's your phones, that's your contact, that's your photographs. It's more than just a phone or even a piece of evidence for the police. It's you.
And when
you give the phone to the cops...
That's what he said to ABC. He said, look, I've got my phone numbers. He said, I've got my partner's phone numbers. I've got pictures in there. I've got accounts they just wanted me to hand over my phone for 3 to 4 hours to some CPD tech. And I have no idea what now happens with that information. He's like, there had already been misinformation at that point, and I don't want more of that information getting put out there. I have a feeling, too, that a lot of athletes, a lot of celebrities, you know, they talked about how police were told to turn their cameras off, which you have every right to do when you're being interviewed, even in his own apartment. And I have a feeling a lot of high-profile people are told that by their attorneys. Look, if anything ever happens, if you're ever in a situation, tell them to turn it off so this thing doesn't pop up on TMZ someday, you know, so maybe that is not unique that he told them to do that.
I guess what I don't like about this conversation from my perspective is it sounds like I'm questioning the victim here.
That's what makes this whole story seem so, you know, why is it that we
but the
don't seem to be
story,
making...
Well, because the victim's story is so bizarre.
Yeah.
And it's plausible, but barely so. So, of course, I think we should start with the guy was mugged and what the motive was or what exactly happened. We don't know. We're trying to get to the bottom of
it. Nothing was stolen either. Keep that in mind. Had a cell phone, wallet, everything like that.
Well, which maybe would make it consistent with a hate crime. They weren't out for his money. They were out to punish him because he's an outspoken LGBTQ activist. He's gay. He's black. Maybe it was a hate crime based on those things.
And he has come out very strongly, and he admitted in the GMA interview, I have come out very, very strongly against President Trump in this administration. He also denied that these attackers were wearing MAGA hats. He said that wasn't the case.
Okay, wait, stop. Were they or were they not wearing MAGA hats?
He said they were not. He said they shouted MAGA country, but
right.
they were not wearing MAGA hats. And the other thing he's trying to diffuse, too, is this internet rumor that it was a date gone wrong, that it was some kind of Grindr meetup or something like that. He said, I went to Subway to get a sandwich and a salad. He said, I'm not trying to meet people at 2 a.m.
A lot of the show is shot, most of the show is shot here in Chicago, so it makes sense that he's taken a flight, he got here late, he's going to shoot the next day, and now it's midnight, 2 a.m, he's looking for something to eat, he goes to the Walgreens, there's nothing there, he's over at the Subway, so the whereabouts make sense. And then he reaches his manager on the phone, and you think, okay, what's he doing talking to his manager on the phone at 2 a.m, but his manager's in Australia, so it's daylight there, so... It's logical that he could be talking to that man, even though it's in the middle of the night, and that he would have overheard it. So now the phone records of the two of them are maybe instructive, maybe not. I don't even know unless they were recording the assault, and they weren't. They were having a phone conversation, right? So there's no recording of the assault, right?
No, but that being said, his phone was still on, and he said even after this scuffle happened, he picked up his phone and realized his manager was still on the line.
Fair enough, yeah. But I mean, okay.
But not recorded, yeah.
So I guess the only thing then that the phone, the police getting the phone would demonstrate was, is it true that he was on the phone with his manager? Okay, that doesn't, to me, offer much help to understanding what happened on the street in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
Except, you know, maybe is he telling the truth or not about that other point? James, you wanted to say what? You're on WGN Radio. Hi, you're on the air, James.
Hey, hey, John. I'll try to be brief. I've been with AT&T since 95, and I remember even 15 years ago, I used to get paper, you know, statements, my bill and all that, and it had a record of all the calls I made and received.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when they went to paperless, a lot of companies did that about, 10 years ago, I did that. So now I can go online, see my bill, and then see all the calls I made, you know, by choice if I choose to do that. You know, because sometimes you make a phone call and, you know, you want to look, oh, I forgot the number and all that. Anyway, the point I'm making is I just don't understand why this is such a big deal, because the police, I'm sure they can, and you might want to get a police officer on, can easily go to AT&T or T-Mobile or whatever the company was and find out the record of calls. In fact, one last thing, and I'll let you go. I remember, and I'm not comparing apples and oranges, I remember old Columbo episodes from the 70s and 80s when you didn't have cell phones, but you still had landline. The police always can check the landline whether a call was placed. I don't know why this is such a big deal.
Well, the reason it's a big deal is he is the victim in this case. And so to get those records, you'd have to go through the process of getting a subpoena through a judge. You have to have, you know, I mean, what is it that they're trying to find out? Are they trying to determine that he's lying about this? Are they trying to determine that it happened? I mean, at this point, they are still conducting this as though he is the victim, not necessarily, you know, a
right, so naturally he would have to cooperate with that. They can't just go get his records.
Exactly. So they have asked him voluntarily, will you give us this information? And at first he said no. And then he said, yes, here you go. But when they got that information earlier this week, they said it was heavily redacted and didn't include things that happened around
that
incident.
But to our caller's point, I think James is onto something here. A record of those phone calls exists.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it does.
And if he doesn't want to volunteer, but somebody had to know, they could find out.
He had to go to a judge, and they got to go through that process.
James, thanks for the phone call.
So TMZ is reporting this afternoon that the two people seen on the surveillance picture are in custody, or I should say are being questioned by police. TMZ is reporting that one of those is an actor who apparently also works on Empire. If I could just read it for you. Jesse Smollett is being questioned by Chicago Police Department, and officers are also talking to another man, an actor who has also appeared on Empire. Sources connected to the case tell us the actor was picked up by Chicago PD right after he flew into O'Hare Airport on Wednesday night. We're told Jesse was brought in Thursday morning for additional questioning. Another man who was with the actor at O'Hare was also taken in for questioning. Those two individuals are being questioned as the persons of interest. So according to TMZ, we know a little bit more about these two. Police identified them by tracking rideshare and taxi records and things like that on the night of the incident.
Really? So we're saying that the two people on that video were both actors on the show?
One of them was an actor on
the
show.
One of them was.
Right.
And flew in about the same time that Jesse did.
No. He flew in last night. So
you mean you're speaking in the present, Steve? Last night?
Yeah, remember that's the way I'm reading it, John. They brought in these two people of interest that we learned about that this morning.
I got it, okay.
So Wednesday night, he would have been taken, the two of them would have been picked up at O'Hare right after they landed.
But that this one of these individuals, who may also be an actor on the show, was in town the night that Jesse was in town.
Well, according to the, evidently, yeah. Now, and he's being described as an actor who has appeared on the show.
Well, I wonder if that's news to Jesse. Did he know that the people that mugged him, one of them was one of his fellow actors?
According to what he said on GMA, the only person he saw had a mask on. And he said, you know, it was 2 degrees below zero outside. And a lot of people, you know, I mean, it's winter, so it wasn't anything completely suspicious.
Do you know the race of the person who we're talking about, Steve? Did they indicate if that is a black person or white person?
I do not know.
Or whatever? The plot thickens. Ryan Burrow, you hear him regularly here on WGN Radio with our news. also reports for ABC nationally. He is covering for the network and for us the Jussie Smollett story. And Steve Bertrand just reminded us that TMZ is now reporting that one of those two men in that video is, in fact, an actor on the show. If those are either witnesses or the guys who mugged Jussie Smollett, then one of those people, the witness or the attacker, is, in fact, one of his fellow actors on the show. Your texts are pouring in, and you're not having any of this. I would say 95% of the texts that are coming in are saying this just doesn't smell right. Tom wanted to say something. You're on WGN. Tom, you're on the air. Hi.
Good afternoon. It really concerns me that Mr. Smollett is allowed to set the narrative here, and I understand the Hollywood love affair with an actor and all of that. Access Hollywood, this morning with GMA, it's just, at some point, I hope the city puts all its ducks in a row, has a proper press conference, and presents, you know, what they know, and put this thing to bed. Because this young man, whatever happened to him, you know, he got punched, he had a couple of puffy eyes, he had to shoot the next morning, he had to come up with an excuse. He couldn't go to his producers and say, oh, whatever happened to me. He had to come up with a story. There are more cameras at the intersection of Water and New Street, which your reporter just mentioned, than there are in Television City in Hollywood. There are hotels, loading docks, and none of this showed up on camera.
All right, Tom, I got your point. Let's let Ryan respond to that.
I walked it, yeah. I mean, there are a ton of them. That being said, I mean, the Good Morning America, they want to get his side of the story. I mean, all we've got right now is police reports and speculation and supporters, but this is the first time he's been on tape and said, this is what happened. And, you know, if he's not telling the truth, then everyone's going to point to that and said, you told us this. And
none of us were there. He's the victim. And I think the challenge for all of us is not to judge it. It's to stay neutral right now. And I understand, Tom. It's getting harder all the time. Thank you for the call. Ryan, thanks for your reporting.
Thank you.
Steve, yesterday's news click was, in 2020, you'll have to pay to watch the Cubs on TV. That's a very abbreviated summary of what's going to happen in 2020 when the Cubs do this cable deal with Sinclair. You had three options. I'd pay any amount for my Cubs. I don't like it, but I'll pay. Or absolutely not, the Cubs are pricing out the fans. Which do you think got the most votes, Steve Bertrand?
I don't like it. I would say absolutely not. I'm never going to pay again.
Yeah, I think that's people's hearts, but I think they'll pay for it.
Of course they will.
Walter Jacobson strolled into our studio, too. Hi, Walter. I mean, you don't like it, and you say, I'm not going to pay. How many times have you said, I'm not doing that? Oh, yes, you are.
That's what I say, too, but I will.
You will. You will. Yeah, that's what we do. We'll take it in the shorts. But remember, we just had a long conversation at the beginning of the show today with a business reporter from the LA Times, because the Dodgers went through this with Time Warner Cable out there. And what happened was they got a provider to do Dodger TV, and then they sold it to all of the cable operations and satellite providers there in LA. And those providers themselves said, you know what? We won't take it. Forget about if you think it's too expensive. The companies that give you your cable said, no, we aren't going to take that package from the team. It's too expensive. We would have to prorate it, be $5 or $6 a subscriber. People are cutting the cable already. If we said, hey, to get the Dodgers, it's going to cost you $5 or $6 more. People just say, screw it, and they will quit cable. So they don't provide it. Here's the bottom line. In Los Angeles, most people cannot watch the Dodgers on TV. And you can't get it on your device because they now link streaming services or the availability of that to, are you buying the TV package? And if you're not, you can't get it. You cannot see the Dodgers on TV in Los Angeles for a lot of people. One provider does provide it, but they're not available everywhere. So not, some people simply cannot watch the Dodgers on TV.
My concern is that Sinclair will start sticking politics into the we don't want to hear from Sinclair telling us that all the politicians on the air are good.
And you see Ron Coomer busting. You know, Pat, before we get to the second inning, I just want to say this about Donald Trump. And then he goes on. I mean, that would be the Sinclair stamp. But actually, Sinclair has been doing sports programming for a while. They know a little bit about this. So we'll see what happens. That's not why I asked Walter Jacobson to come in, though.
Oh.
Your perspective that you wrote and provided for the Steve Cochran Show and us here at WGN Radio is about the local current politics in the city of Chicago. What are you saying about that, Walter?
I'm trying to say that the things have gotten kind of silly. As we get toward the end of the line, it's the silly season where they stop talking, candidates stop talking about, and reporters stop asking them about the issues that are important, and they start playing each other off against each other. And it's,
give me an example.
Well, they're all talking more about well, hold on. I want to know how to express it without taking up too much time.
I can quote you to you if you want.
Yeah.
You said Preckwinkle's fundraiser,
right,
and Mendoza's wedding and Burke's home and Chico's job and Burke's office and Bill Daley and him backing out of the debates. And, of course, did he cheat on his insurance exam? These are all great conversations for those of us on talk radio.
Yeah, right.
Are you telling me they're not all that important, though?
No, they're not all that important. I don't think they are. These candidates are talking about Ed Burke more than they are talking about the issues in the mayoral campaign.
Yeah.
Each one of them in his own or her own way is saying to the listening audience that the candidates, their opponents, are connected closely to Burke. And there are examples. You know, Ed Burke did hold a fundraiser in his home for Preckwinkle, and he did hold a wedding party in his home for Mendoza, and he did have a job for Gary Chico when Burke was chairman of the Finance Committee, and that's what the other candidates are all saying, that Preckwinkle, Mendoza, and Chico are so closely tied to Burke, ergo they are politicians without an ethics standard.
What do you think of that?
Which is nonsense. It's
That's
crazy.
Nonsense.
I mean,
That's
these
nonsense.
Are little things. You know, politicians do hold fundraisers for each other, and they do have connections with each other. You can't say that because of that, the candidates who are doing something or have done something with Ed Burke are as unethical as Burke has been, at least according to this indictment or the charges by the federal government. It just gets kind of silly. You know, what else? Well, aren't there more important things for them to talk about the last minute? Should we not be able to make up our minds on where they stand on the key issues rather than on these things? On the other hand, I can see it in your face, and I have to agree with you that the question of ethics is important.
Oh, yeah, but I think what you've got is me guilt to right, dead to rights, because these other topics are easy to sort of understand,
of course,
and they're delicious. And we can judge the ethics of some of these people. What I can't do, Walter, is figure out who has the best way to get guns off the street or get people from getting killed on the South Side. But maybe I should be spending more time on that.
Well, I don't know that we could do much about that with John, because the other candidate, other politicians, particularly Mayor Emanuel, have tried their hardest to get guns off the street. And Eddie Johnson, the superintendent of police, has tried his hardest to get guns off the street. You know, and they just keep coming in. We will need the General Assembly in Springfield to pass some laws that prohibit gun sales in one state going into Illinois. And that's not going to happen because, for God's sakes, despite the failures recently of the NRA to continue its impact, it does. I mean, you know, it's hard to understand. The NRA has received like 15% less in contributions
I've
than
heard.
In the past, right?
Yeah.
But it still has the power in Congress and in state legislatures to keep the anti-gun legislation off the books.
But in your piece, Walter, you say, you quote Mendoza, Bill
right.
Daley has thinner skin
right.
than a single-cell microorganism. That's a good line. He reads a little criticism of himself in a newspaper, and then he wilts like a flower. So they're all sort of doing this tit for tat. I don't hear them talking that much about the violence on the streets of Chicago.
Right.
So if we fall into the trap of talking about this silly stuff, maybe it's because they're doing it.
Or is it because we're not as interested because we know that doesn't draw an audience?
There's
like the
chicken
other.
And the egg.
That's
right?
Absolutely right.
I asked the group at the Mincing Rascals, do they know who they're going to vote for mayor? I mean, you got a lot of candidates and a lot of good candidates or you know, big time candidates, big names.
Yeah.
And I didn't think many of them would have made up their mind yet. I haven't.
You have. I have not either.
No.
You know, there's an interesting aspect to all this connected to things you're saying.
Yeah.
And that is the Tribune endorsing Daley.
How about that?
And the Sun-Times endorsing Lightfoot.
Yeah.
So we will get an idea of the impact of those endorsements. Usually they don't mean a lot, but I'm going to be watching very carefully.
The endorsements matter to me. If you, Walter, the endorsements matter to me because I don't pay enough attention. And if the Tribune said Bill Daley, then maybe I should look past that insurance thing. Or if they say Lori Lightfoot in the Sun-Times, maybe I should invest a little more time in her. She came into the studio and I thought she was dynamite. I was very impressed with her. Yeah. But if Walter Jacobson came on the radio and said, I'm voting for X and here's why. If Eric Zorn personally endorses somebody, that carries weight with me, I have to tell you, because I don't pay enough attention to these details, and I think some of them have.
I'm afraid, and always have been, to do that. I can't let myself be on one side or the other on issues, because then I lose my credibility. I have opinions. I'll keep them to myself. Many times I don't even vote, because I don't want to be caught by an opponent of one of the candidates saying, well, Jacobson says this or Jacobson says that. And they go to the management of the stations here or CBS or wherever I was and say, how can you expect Jacobson to be fair? He's made clear who he's for. I really honestly don't have a for and against. That's not my role.
You have not made up your mind in this
No.
race. 630 texts in and says, Walter should run for mayor of Chicago. You could say I'm voting for me, Walter Jacobson.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'm voting for me. I, in fact, one time did think about doing that. When Dan Walker was governor, his right-hand political guy tried to start a rush for Jacobson for mayor. Jake, vote for Jake for mayor.
You aren't interested?
No, no. I mean, I think my fantasy, like everybody who's involved in politics, it'd be great to be mayor of Chicago. It'd be just too hard a job.
Oh, yeah.
But it'd be great fun.
Oh, yeah. I think it would be both. I see the fun of it. And it is a great American city, but I don't want that job. It does not pay enough. It's the headaches, the complications, the conundrums. I mean, how do you, if you're the mayor, you got to figure out how to balance the budget. You've got the debt crisis. You've got the pension thing. You've got schools. You've got crime in the streets. Good luck to you on that, Jack.
Why would anybody want to do
I'm
it?
I'm telling you.
Right.
Walter Jacobson's perspectives
what if
are they, heard.
What if you had a chance to be president of the United States? Would you
do that? I want to be. No, I don't want that. I want to be king. I want to be king. Walter.
You're already king.
It's good to see you, my friend. The other day, I visited with John Kenny. He is a writer for The New Yorker and other places. He wrote a book called Love Poems for Married People. Part of the conversation went like this.
Absolutely absurdist takes on marriage using poetry as a device. I wrote a short piece for the New Yorker magazine a few years back, Valentine's Day Poems for Married People, and someone at my publisher had the, as with all good ideas, this one was not mine. And they suggested I turn it into a book, but there wasn't a ton of time for it, so it was a six-week sprint last summer to write a lot of poems.
And the poems describe sort of everyday life for a married couple, maybe with kids. And while at first blush, every poem starts out like, oh, this will be romantic and capture sort of the what it's like living that life with that partner. But then they always kind of crash and burn at the end, don't they?
They do. And that's what makes it funny. The history of poetry, certainly romantic poetry, tends to be fairly one note. Your eyes are like stars. Your hair is like hair. So I thought, you know, there might be a chance to sort of expand the lens there a little bit. You know, whether you're married or not, if you're in a short-term, long-term relationship, whether you have kids or not, gay or straight, there is this universality to the absurdity of living 7 days a week with the same person for a long, long time.
Are you against the notion? I mean,
not at all. Quite the opposite. The irony for me is how much we need it. We are drawn to other people. We want to be with them. There's a new study, and it's either yesterday's or today's Times, that living alone is bad for your health. We are naturally creatures who want to be with each other, but that's where the fun happens. That's where the crazy stuff happens.
Yeah, amen.
No, I'm happily married for 14 years. Most of these are written from the point of view of a woman because I wanted to make them the heroes and the men the fall guy. I think we all tend to feel the same way about these things.
My vasectomy, you wrote, yes, we have four children, and I promised we wouldn't have more after the third. That said, I don't know why you have to be here in person in the surgical room. And no, honey, the doctor is not going to let you make the snip. Oh, wait, he is. Honey, 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 to which you laugh and say, it wasn't a good idea to get pregnant at 40 with our fourth child either. You have a weird look on your face, honey. Careful. I mean,
I've not been to it, but my wife is urging me to see that movie.
Yeah. Was it tempting, though, because you really are a good poet? I mean, you really do capture in a sort of melodic way the conversation and the topics of everyday life for married people. Was it tempting, though, to at some point insert a truly romantic, sincere, warm one and not a sarcastic, funny one?
Never. And I'm doing 20 back-to-back-to-back interviews today, John. You are the first person to come close to saying something like, I'm a good poet. You're very kind to say that. I don't think I'm a good poet. I hope they're funny, though. You know, as I say, I think for these to work, they have to be true and really close to the bone of what relationships are. And, you know, I also, I'm a fan, right? I don't want to leave people with the notion that marriage, relationships, whatever, however you define that thing you have, are bad. They're not. They're just hard. They're really hard. But we need them. And they give structure and meaning to our lives, but they're the craziest darn things, right?
What's your favorite poem in your book?
Why are you in the shower with me? Why are you in the shower with me? Did the bathtub shrink? I ask because here we are, naked, showering together like we once did all the time. Remember, at the beginning, we would stand and talk, seals slipping by one another, a playful ease letting the other into the stream. Now, I'm not sure what you're doing in here. I'm freezing. There's shampoo stinging my eyes. You just stepped on my foot. For the love of Christ, who flushed the toilet because I'm being scalded alive? Get out, now. It was a nice idea, though, honey. Could you close the door?
Yeah.
There's a wonderful quote. I don't know who says it, but there's a wonderful quote that I hope guides these. And a successful marriage, the person said, requires falling in love many, many times, but always with the same person.
John Kenny's book is Love Poems for Married People. It's a Putnam hardback. It's just as big as you might imagine, a thin little black book of funny poems like those. John Kenny's Love Poems for Married People.